That is brand new music from my newest favorite band, The Eels. And that tune, Open My Present, here on The Camille Conti Show. Conversations, interviews, and music. And I always love it when all of those things are happening at the same time. And that's what's going to happen right now as I welcome into the Rock Live studio my dear friend and musician extraordinaire, as well as the founder of the Anchorage Music Co-op, Laura Oden. How about that for an intro?
Wow.
Did you know you were all those things?
No, not often.
I'm so happy you're here. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. It's thank great you. To be here.
Yeah, thank you for bringing your guitar.
Yeah, I love to play.
Excited for you to play some music.
Always love to talk to you.
I want to start at the beginning. How long have you been in Anchorage?
Almost 20 years.
Okay. So I'm 25, you're 20. And have you always been involved in music, or is this something that's kind of blossomed more recently?
Well, when I came to Anchorage, I was not involved in music. Other than being a listener of music and an appreciator of music, I was not involved in music.
In a personal way, though, were you dabbling with the guitar and songwriting?
Well, I dabbled. I dabbled a little bit. But then I connected up with a good friend of mine, with Isabel, and we started playing as the Pagan Cowgirls, and we played for a few years, and it was great.
Okay, but hold on a second. But you met Isabel, but how did it move from not playing or songwriting to suddenly playing and singing with her?
Well, we just ran into each other, and it was one of those conversations like, I don't play music, and she doesn't play music, so let's not play music together one afternoon. It was one of those. And she had developed the idea that she could just lay her hands on the guitar until it sounded good.
Wow.
And I thought that was a pretty cool technique. And right away, I started singing with her, which was, I had never sung before. So that was just an experiment, and it was fun. And because it was fun, we just kept on playing. And then I learned a lot from her, and I started putting my hands on the guitar until it sounded good.
That is
and
fantastic.
Everything pretty much went from there. I did grow up playing music, playing piano, and I had a very musical family, but I was not well educated in music, and I certainly didn't think of myself as a musician or a singer.
And so from that point where the two of you got together, and I love that, that just takes all the pressure off.
Right.
Let's not make music together. Yeah. And so from that moment, how far past that did you really start to get, wow, I am a musician. I can play this guitar.
Years. I think it only happened for me recently. I think it happened very recently, actually. It was something I really struggled with. And when Isabel and I played together in the beginning, I was very moved to play music. But thinking of myself as a musician was something that came a lot later. It's even still hard for me to say.
And I can really relate to that because I've been doing radio for 25 years. And I would say just 2 years ago, did I actually say out loud, I think I'm an artist. Because I always saw myself as the person who interviewed the artists and loved the artists and supported the artists. But I can appreciate that. And it's not something I say all the time because I don't quite have that relationship to it either. But it's only recently, even for me, that I began to give myself permission to see myself in that light.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was kind of liberating and kind of nice, actually. Laura Oden is my guest live in the Rock Live studio today with her guitar, which means she'll be playing a song, at least one, in just a few moments. And so one of the things that's sweet for me is you and I became friends, and I got to see you in these early stages that you're speaking about where you would just maybe for your friends play guitar.
Are you talking about back in the Pagan Cowgirl days?
Did I know you back then? I don't know that I did. I think it's more recent. That maybe even at the Tribe Barbecue Sundays, the studio barbecue might have been where I first saw you play guitar. But regardless, it was kind of in the mix of our friendships when I was like, oh, I didn't know that you even played.
Yeah.
And I'm bringing this up because it's been a really beautiful thing to watch you really step into this fully and go from playing maybe privately with other people and then publicly. How was that leap for you when you started to stand in front of an audience and play?
You know, it's been It's been a really interesting journey for me. I think I could never have predicted that this was kind of where it was going to end up. I had stopped playing music for about 15 years, and it was really related to, you know, having a baby and marriage and job and sure. all the things that kind of redirect your creativity. And when my daughter turned about, I don't know, 13 or so, I sort of pulled out the guitar and had some sort of unusual coincidences that brought the music out again. And it was, when it first started, it was really instantaneous, like a flood that had been, like a well that had been capped for 15 years. So it really came out in a flood. As soon as I reconnected and I started writing songs very rapidly, and that happened for a couple of years. You know, at the beginning, it was just being motivated to write, to express. And then sort of the next step was you want to then play. And then you want to play in a place where other people can connect, because part of the expression is the connection.
Absolutely.
And so it's not anything that I feel I necessarily have any artful control over. It just, it's something that grabs a hold of you, you know?
I love that. I'm ready to hear something now. What will you play for us? I know, just that whole sharing right there. I'm like, okay, now I want to connect and hear something.
I think I'm going to play Love Finds, okay. Which is on my CD.
Great.
Time unfolds and opens new roads, and like an unfamiliar guest, you don't get to know the rest. La da da. La da. Love's like water, it finds its own way. Love will find you, love will find you. That you're stuck in time, but time just flies on by. You have to open your eyes, 'cause love just heals, and time just flies, and love just heals, and time just flies on by. La da da. La da. Love's like water, it finds its own way. And love will find you, love will find you, love will find you anyway, anyway, anywhere you are, anywhere you are, anywhere. Love will find. Yeah. Love finds. Yeah. Love finds. Anyway.
Oh, that is beautiful. That is such a poetic line about love like water finds its way. That is really beautiful. I just love that song.
It's fun to play.
I have to ask you this question because when you and I were chatting recently, you told me this incredible story, and it is a long story, so I'm not asking you necessarily to tell the whole story unless you want to, but you've studied Russian studies, and you told me that incredible story that had to do with peace and Russia.
The peace march. Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about that again? Because that's really an extraordinary thing.
Yeah. In 1986, we did a peace march from L.A. to Washington, D.C.
And who's the we?
It was called the Great Peace March.
Okay.
And I got involved with that group about halfway. They had a huge group of people that started, very, very large group of people. They marched out to the desert in Barstow, and they got stranded in the desert, and the repo man came and took all their equipment, and their funding fell apart, and their organizationally they had been not very solid. And about 5,000 people sort of lasted out of that group, and the rest of that group walked the rest of the way across the country. And I got involved with him about halfway, and I was one of the people who was organizing on the D.C. end. So when everybody showed up, there was about 20,000 people who showed up in Washington, D.C. As a protest against nuclear, or it was a protest against nuclear arms for nuclear disarmament in 1986. And as we were walking across the country, many people said, well, you could do it here, but you can't do it in the Soviet Union. So, of course, we did it in the Soviet Union the next year from Leningrad to Moscow. And that was the first, there was a lot of firsts on that trip, including we did the first big rock concert in the Soviet Union ever, even before Billy Joel did his. And it was in Izmailovo Stadium. There was 50,000 people there. It was huge. Then we did a series of peace marches. And the following year, we brought a couple hundred Soviets back to the United States, and we walked here. And
what was that moment, though, about the square?
Oh, yeah, we took the first American flag into Red Square.
I mean, they said that you couldn't, right? But you did anyway.
Yeah, we did. We had been walking from Leningrad. Of course, we weren't able to walk the entire way because it was 1987. Mm-hmm. And the Soviet Peace Committee had gone out on a huge limb just to let us be there at all. So we were very, very lucky to walk. And we would walk, and then we'd be bused kind of a little bit to the next town, and we would walk in. And so, you know, there were many 16 mile days of walking. But when we got to Moscow, they said, you can't walk in Red Square. And we said, well, you know, they're Americans. I don't think you really understand. They are going to walk in Red Square. And they said, you can't walk in Red Square. And we said, well, yeah, I think they're gonna. And anyway, we went round and round and round on these negotiations. It was very stressful. And they had worked out a compromise so that we could walk along the side of Red Square.
And how many people are there now with you walking?
Well, the core group was 200 Americans and 200 Soviets.
Okay.
You know, everywhere we went, we were just mobbed by Russians. So I don't have a recollection of how big it was at that point. But we had done our sort of official walk, and then I was with one of my friends, and he looked over at me, and he said, Laura, look, they're in Red Square, sure enough.
Wow.
So we went racing over there, and there was a small group of people with the American flag and the Russian flag and probably some other flags that I can't remember. and they were just walking in Red Square, and it was really just a phenomenal sight. Anybody who's been to Moscow mm-hmm. knows that Red Square is just this fascinating place. And as we walked, the crowd built and built and built and built and built. And then we went all the way around Red Square with the crowd getting longer and longer, bigger and bigger. And normally at that spot, you would go underneath the road to cross the road. But we had so much energy that we just we went ahead and walked across the street. And the Soviet police that were there, they saw what was happening, and they did stop traffic for us. It was really
one of
those great moments of glasnost and perestroika and, you know, Soviet-American, you know.
Relations. It was just a great, it's such a beautiful story. More than ever, I just love hearing the beauty of that story, because it just breathes such possibility where, you know, we think there isn't any. And all in the name of peace, you walked and were able to do something that they said you could never do.
Well, and the timing was incredible, because I had actually been to the Soviet Union before. I had been there in 1984 when Andropov was president. So the difference just in a few years was really mm-hmm. remarkable. And of course, when we were there in 87, it was really early perestroika and glasnost, and Gorbachev had just started really doing what he was going to do. So all of the inspiration and excitement around that very dramatic time mm-hmm. was very present.
And what I'm remembering as you're speaking is back in 1987 on the East Coast at Madison Square Garden, we were at the No Nukes concert, which came after that walk in Washington in 1986, because that was about no nukes. And so that was that concert that followed the year after you guys were in D.C. doing that march. So
I'm sure that there was so much anti-nuclear mm-hmm. sentiment
very
that
strong.
Was going on right about that time. Of course, we hadn't really done anything to disarm. And we had just built up.
Is there anything about that time and what you did and what you were a part of that you would like to reactivate in your life, or that you have going on now in your life? Or was that just one wonderful moment and that's that?
You know, that is a great question, because I think the thing about that time that was the most meaningful to me is that I met people who were willing to quit their jobs mm-hmm. and sell their houses to go walk across the country. I mean, babies were born on this march. People made really huge changes to come do this thing. And the result of it was that we had these really powerful bonds. And when we set out to do this march in the Soviet Union, we knew that it was, first off, unlikely that we would be able to go. And we knew that it was going to be hard to explain why we were doing it, because we weren't really all we were doing on the march was walking. That's all we were doing. We kind of let go mm-hmm. of a whole lot of the activist stuff that we would normally do.
I mean, the walking was the activist step.
Was the activism. And, you know, by the end of that walk, everybody was so incredibly bonded, and everyone knew that you really have to follow your spirit mm-hmm. and your heart. You have to do the things that you're called to do. And I feel like that really, that kind of energy, that kind of motivation mm-hmm. and creativity, I would say that the Peace March was one of those times where that creativity was super intense mm-hmm. and fulfilling. And music is very similar to that. So I feel like I'm very filled in that same way right now.
That's a wonderful analogy. And so filled that you were overflowing and went on to create the Anchorage Music Co-op. So tell me about this, the birth of this co-op.
Well, and to be fair, there was another person who was actually on board before I was. So Lonnie Gransberry was the one who really started it. He started it as called the Music Venue Partnership, and it was a great idea. He saw his friends having difficulty getting musicians and venues partnered up, so he was trying to set up some kind of structure where this could be facilitated. And out of that was born the idea of a co-op. I've always been incredibly attracted to the notion of a co-op. When I was on the East Coast, of course, we had lots of food co-ops. There are actually quite a few co-ops throughout the world. They all do different things.
So explain what a co-op is.
Well, I think a co-op is a really loose term that can be used for so many different things, but in all cases, a co-op benefits its members. I think that's the unifying theme, is that if you're a part of a co-op, you get some kind of direct benefit out of it. So we have a pretty loose definition of who is a member of the Anchorage Music Co-op, and I kind of break it into two different categories. We've got musicians and we've got audience, and both of those things are integral. And when we started with the music co-op, a huge part of our goal was to provide places where people could play and really be heard, which is, there's plenty of places in Anchorage where you can play and have a nice social time, and that's all fine and good and necessary, but it's also important to have listening rooms where you can actually hear what's going on.
Yeah. For people who actually want to be there for the music.
Well, it's really important for a musician to have an audience to connect with, and I think vice versa. You don't have any idea who's going to like your music, but when someone connects, you want to have a space for that to happen.
Absolutely. And you were doing a lot of work over at Out North here in Anchorage.
Yeah, our first year was at Out North, and we truthfully, I don't know where we would have started if we hadn't started there. Right at the time where we came along, they were coming up with this idea of art house residence, and we were one of the first groups that asked to be a part of that experiment. So we got to do shows over there every month for the first year, and they were great shows. Mm.
And now that that's closed, you're finding venues with ease, or is it kind of back to the drawing board about where to take this?
We actually moved about a year ago over to the Quonset Hut at Fiore d'Italia, which is the old Garden of Eden for anybody who's been around for a while. So that restaurant has been around for a really long while, more than 50 years. And the old bar is still there. The whole old Quonset Hut has the same old Alaskana vibe. It's a great venue. And we wanted to be in a place where people could relax and have some food and alcohol, and that wasn't available at Out North. Plus, Out North had they had a lot of people that were interested in using their space, so they had a lot of they had to juggle and get everybody in there. And we were trying to, we were still kind of in experimental mode, trying to figure out how we wanted to do. We wanted to be a little bit more free to experiment with different days and stuff like that.
Well, so, and you just had Mike Gorder and Jared Woods.
Yeah.
A couple weeks ago now.
Oh my gosh, they had us laughing our butts off. They were so funny, those two.
And do they play separate sets and then together, or it just flows however?
Well, we do different shows, but we do, one of the things we learned early on is that the round robin shows, the shows where you go one back and forth, you sing a song, I sing a song, back and forth. Those are just great shows, and that's sort of our specialty in some ways.
I love that. It's a rare thing to see. Well, it's fun for us as the audience, and it's got to be fun for you guys as the musicians.
Well, it's great because you develop this rapport with your audience and with the other musician, and there's not a whole lot of that going on in Anchorage. So the round robin shows have been really successful for us, and we usually do it over at Out North. We had three people on stage sometimes, but here at the Quonset Hut, we're doing a two people, because it's smaller.
So here's a logistics question I have to ask you. Does Anchorage have enough musicians to apply to the Anchorage Co-op with some regularity, or are you finding that you might have to go, let's say, to a quarterly presentation?
Oh, we're not running out of musicians at all. Quite the opposite. We've reached the point where Anchorage is really pumping out some fantastic music and art at this point. I mean, it's just, there's so much wonderful talent here.
And so you're doing it monthly?
Almost. We're doing it more than monthly.
Are you really?
Yeah. Like I said, you know, we kind of broke away from the absolute regular, you know, fourth Saturday, fourth Friday of every month. So we're kind of squeezing them in when we can. That really helped us once we started being more flexible on times, because then we could catch musicians when they weren't playing at other venues. But this is a songwriter's town.
It is.
I mean, we've figured this out a while ago. We're pumping out phenomenal songwriters in this town. And everyone plays here, and then they sort of dabble in the lower 48, or maybe they'll go tour mm-hmm. in the lower 48. But we need to build those bridges so that they can play here, and they could go south, they can make more contacts down there. And even this year, we experimented by bringing a couple of acts to the music co-op that they were up here already, but they were from lower 48. So we're looking at all kinds of stuff. And of course, the under 21 open mic, that one has been hugely successful.
Really? That's fantastic.
That's at the Middleway. That's the last Friday of every month.
So you host an open mic for under 21 singer-songwriter performers?
No, just under 21, whatever you want to play. Oh. We've had six-year-olds playing violin.
Oh my gosh.
It is a scream. They are great.
Again, how wonderful.
You would not believe the talent. But the thing is, you know, if we're going to have an arts scene where we have enough people to open for bigger acts when they come up here,
right,
we've got to start giving younger people a place to play. And up until this one, there really hasn't been any place for them to play and get their sea legs. You've got to perform for people quite a bit before you can, you know, really let your hair down.
Yeah. Well, because there's many layers to that experience. I mean, just feeling comfortable getting up in front of people,
exactly.
then kind of tweaking your act, so to speak, and trying out different things. And yeah, that how wonderful. A six-year-old playing the violin. That's fantastic.
Oh, yeah. That's just the tip of the iceberg.
And who's coming up next? What's the next performers you have?
The next show is October 12th, and it's going to be Michael Howard.
Oh, he's wonderful.
Yeah, he's great.
He's wonderful.
Then the next one after that is going to be a Irish band called Rogues and Wenches.
Not anybody that's got the word wench in their title, you
they,
gotta love
they
it.
Dress up and everything. It's great.
Tell me about the new album you have out and this incredible fundraiser, the Kickstarter program, and just share a little bit about that project and what that's been like for you.
Well, I didn't do a Kickstarter because Kickstarter closed down my account about 2 days before I was to launch. And so I, at the 11th hour, switched over to a different platform.
Why did they do that?
Because they didn't like some numbers in my bank account and they were not able to revive it in time.
Wow.
In time for me to launch on Kickstarter. So that turned out to be a huge blessing in disguise. And I ended up doing a crowd fundraising event on Indiegogo, which was a great experience. Crowdfunding is a really good way for musicians to fund their projects.
Mm-hmm. I had a gentleman on my show who does radiocrowdfund.com, Paul Schumer, who's friends
cool.
with Tom Begich. And what he does,
Neat.
He's in Austin. What he does is he scours the crowdfunding artists and highlights the ones that he finds particularly good and connects people with their fundraising efforts, samples of their music. It's just radiocrowdfund.com. It's just really wonderful. And you did you record that here in Anchorage?
I did.
Your new CD? Okay.
Yeah, it was recorded at Twisted Penguin and also up at Evan Phillips's studio.
You had some good people working on it.
I had great musicians.
And where can people access that music and grab that CD?
Well, you can always go to lauraodin.com, but then you can get it on iTunes and CD Baby and everything. But if you go to lauraodin.com, you can find everything you need. And then the other one I should mention, too, is anchoragemusic.org.
So is that the co-op?
Anchoragemusic.org is the co-op.
Okay.
And lauraodin.com is me.
Okay. And will you play something from the new album for us?
Actually, I was thinking about playing a new song. What
oh, even better.
Yeah.
I love it. So
this is really brand spanking new.
Okay. What's it called?
It's called Kenai Moon. And I wrote it after Salmon Stock because Salmon Stock, I was so inspired by Salmon Stock this year. It's great. Kenai Moon, you've left too soon. I'm not ready to wake from your sleepy haze. I must have stumbled through cloud of devil's brew. Maybe I've been sweetened by witch's tea. Please, Lord, don't make me resist. Oh, Lord, please, Lord, 'cause I've already been
Bravo. Just gorgeous. Oh my gosh, the world premiere, a brand new song from Laura Odin. Beautiful. Kenai Moon, I just love it. Absolutely gorgeous. New CD, Alchemy, available at the website. Gorgeous website, beautiful photos by photographer Mike Conti. Just a wonderful website, lauraodin.com. You can find her on Facebook. Go like the page. Go buy the music. Go support the Anchorage Music Co-op's next performance. And by all means, come on out and enjoy Laura's music live. Thank you for stopping by the studio. What a treat.
Oh, what a treat for me to be here. Thank you.